The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Of course, coming up this weekend as well, just to give you a little news update, or news of the work update, I should say. We've got the Belfast PAC, the Public Bible Lecture, up in Northern Ireland. And Richard was telling me after our interview yesterday that he's actually on the road with the crew tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning, so he won't be on Trumpet Hour this Friday. He'll be on the road and I guess on the ferry as well as they take the van. Richard, Sam, Edwin, I think that's it, taking the van with all the gear, the literature, the TV cameras, pretty much everything that we need to run that that small pack. And then we'll be joining them soon after, some of us. And also, don't forget about the pack in Tampa. I'm presuming my father will fly out Sunday morning for that event on Sunday night. And then the follow-up to that the night after, Monday. So Saturday and Sunday afternoon for us, Saturday night and Sunday afternoon for us, and Sunday night, Monday night for the Tampa pack. Well, coming up on today's show, we've got some of the latest regarding the Steele dossier, who knew about it, and when, some new information revealed yesterday. And also, we'll be talking in the second segment about the amount of time. It's really pretty incredible, this story about the number of hours we spend in front of screens every single day, and together with that disturbing trend, we'll have another admonition for further study and reading, as we've been stressing so much in recent months. There's some really inspiring clips that we'll play to you from David McCullough talking about America's first president, George Washington. This was a video sent to me by one of our listeners down in Australia, so I think you'll find those few clips really inspirational. And also, a lot of emails have piled up over the last couple of weeks. We haven't been reading too many of them lately, so we'll set aside some extra time on today's show to go through all of those. There's one in particular, right. I think we have this for the end of the mailbag from one of our adorable young listeners, who sent a message just the other day. So you want to stay tuned for all of these treats, these tidbits that we're going to try to get through on today's show. Well, last night, Theresa May won her no-confidence vote, as expected. Her party supported her along with the Democratic Unionist Party.
The ayes to the right, 306. The noes to the left, 325. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock!
On a point of order, Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased that this House has expressed its confidence in the government tonight. I do not take this responsibility lightly, and my government will continue its work to increase our prosperity, guarantee our security, and to strengthen our union. And yes, we will also continue to work to deliver on the solemn promise we made to the people of this country to deliver on the result of the referendum and leave the European Union.
Well, if you do the math there, I think she won by just 19 votes. So not exactly a strong endorsement coming from the House. But there she was, very confidently pronouncing that she knows the way forward. And from what all of the papers are saying this morning, it does look like she, which is not going to make a lot of people in the UK happy, I'm sure, but it looks like she's going to be pushing for a much softer Brexit. Rather than reach out to the huge number of pro-Brexit members in her own party, It's looking like she's aiming to get more support for a new deal with some of the senior members of the Labour Party. Of course, the Labour Party is a lot more pro-EU. There were quite a few reports this morning about this telephone call between Philip Hammond. He's the Chancellor of the Exchequer here in the UK, here in Theresa May's government. And he made this call with the heads of 330 companies, including Tesco and Siemens and Amazon. These are all big companies here in the UK. And some of the information about this phone call, some of it was leaked to The Telegraph. And the comments that Mr. Hammond made, again, indicate that Britain's going to be moving further and further away from a clean break from the EU, which is what a majority of voters wanted back in 2016. There's this push now. There's going to be this push in Parliament to try to stop a clean no-deal break from happening. This is according to The Telegraph. Philip Hammond told business leaders that the threat, as he put it, of a no-deal Brexit could be taken off the table within days and potentially lead to Article 50 rescinded. A leaked recording of a conference call reveals. It says further, the Chancellor set out how a backbench bill could effectively be used to stop any prospect of no deal. He suggested that ministers may even back the plan when asked for an assurance by the head of Tesco that the government would not oppose the motion. And then finally, notice what the Telegraph says here. The disclosure reveals the close nature of the relationship between the Treasury and some of Britain's biggest businesses and how they appear to be working in tandem to block a hard Brexit. It says it will also add to suspicions that Mr. Hammond has been orchestrating attempts to soften Brexit. So the people of Britain, they vote against the EU or to leave the EU. And here is yet another example of the elites in government, and in this case in business, conspiring to stop it or to thwart the will of the people. Well, we know one way or another, Britain is going to end up on the outside because it is prophesied. Well, yesterday there was also a suicide bombing in Syria. I think it was a Syrian restaurant that ended up killing four Americans. I think 19 people in total. But the Americans, there were two military service members, and then a civilian Defense Department employee, and then also a Pentagon contractor. And according to the Wall Street Journal, before yesterday, two Americans had been killed in action in Syria since the U.S. deployed troops there in 2015. So two over the course of that time. And then yesterday it doubles. Yesterday, and this comes just 1 month after President Trump announced that he was going to rapidly withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. They had the bar hearing yesterday at Capitol Hill. And Lindsey Graham, who's been pretty outspoken against. He's a big supporter of the president in a lot of ways, but on this point, he disagrees, and so they're having this hearing for the new attorney general, and here is Lindsey Graham interrupting the hearing to make a statement about Syria.
There was an attack today on a restaurant, I think restaurant I visited with the Kurds and Arabs and others, in Manbij, Syria, to hold on to some representative government. And fortunately, I believe some American advisors were killed there by ISIS. So this is not the subject matter of the hearing, but I want to make a quick statement. My concern by the statements made by President Trump is that you had set in motion enthusiasm by the enemy we're fighting.
Some strong criticism there coming from Lindsey Graham, saying that the president, in this decision that he's made, he has set in motion enthusiasm by the enemy that we're fighting. Here comes this suicide blast, killing four Americans. Just think about the timing here. You wonder if this means the president is going to pull out faster, or maybe he'll bear down on this enemy. He has shown some force when he first came into office to at least go after ISIS. But we'll see how that this comes down. It's interesting, another headline here that Brent sent over from Jerusalem. It says, Iran vows no military withdrawal from Syria. So they're not leaving. They're vowing to stay. And here it's the United States that can't seem to find the door fast enough. Well, that affects a lot of prophecies as well, including Daniel 11 and verse 40. Of course, eventually we know how the Middle East itself is going to be split because of the prophecy in Psalm 83. So lots to keep our eyes on there, as always. Another update here, too, I said at the top there about the Steele dossier. This is from a report by John Solomon at The Hill. Excuse me, at The Hill. He says that when the annals of mistakes and abuses in the FBI's Russia investigation are finally written, Bruce Orr almost certainly will be the number one witness. He was, and he's not this anymore, but at the time all this was happening, he was the number four man at the Department of Justice. And according to what we're now finding out about some of his testimony in recent months, He met with Christopher Steele, the author of the Steele dossier. He met with him on July 30th, 2016. And according to his testimony since, he was cautioning everybody about how this guy was motivated by a hatred for Donald Trump. It was biased, in other words. And so he was cautioning the DOJ. He was cautioning the FBI. It says Orr's activities, chronicled in handwritten notes and congressional testimony that I gleaned from sources, this is John Solomon writing, provide the most damning evidence to date that FBI and DOJ officials may have misled federal judges in October 2016 in their zeal to obtain the warrant targeting Trump advisor Carter Page just weeks before the election. It says, since it was disclosed last year that Steele's dossier formed a central piece of evidence supporting the FISA warrant, justice and FBI officials have been vague about exactly when they learned that Steele's work was paid for by the law firm representing the Clinton campaign. So we learned long ago that this was the central piece, this dossier. This is what got them the FISA warrants. This is what allowed for them to spy on the Trump campaign. And so through it all, as it says there in that report, the justice and FBI officials, they've been really vague about, well, we didn't really know it was motivated by or sponsored by or funded by the Clinton campaign. We didn't know these things. Well, now we're beginning to find out that they did know. They did know it was coming from Hillary Clinton. They did know it was opposition research. They knew all of those things, and they carried on anyway. Here's what John Solomon said last night on Fox News.
If the new Attorney General, Bill Barr, if the existing Attorney General, Matt Whitaker, if the Justice Department Inspector General, if Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham wants to investigate whether there was willful and knowing misleading of the FISA court, all they have to do is call Bruce Orr, because Bruce Orr makes it adamantly clear. He told the FBI, I had concerns about bias. This is connected to the Clinton campaign. Its reliability is suspect. You need to do your own homework before you use it. And yet they go ahead and rush it through the FISA process. We've been talking about this, and we've been putting these pieces together, but this is probably the single most damning piece of evidence. It comes from the number four Justice Department official, the person that first really walks it in a substantial way to the FBI, and he puts a word of caution on it, and those words of caution are blown past as we submit a FISA with information that was not yet corroborated.
It was unverified, and yet they used it. They used it as evidence in court. They used it to get those FISA documents or those FISA warrants. And as is now brought out, They knew going in, which just shows how deceptive they were going into those courts. Now, in one sense, this is not exactly new. If your eyes are open, if you're reading or hearing this program or reading at thetrumpet.com and some of these other sources, John Solomon, maybe first among them, he's been right on top of this. It's not surprising. But you go back to the timeline, as I tried to do the other day on the program, July 30th, 2016, here's Bruce Orr. He's the number four man at the DOJ. He's meeting with Christopher Steele. And Bruce Orr's wife, of course, she works for Fusion GPS. That's the firm that's employing Steele. That's the firm that the Clinton campaign worked through. So here's Bruce Orr. He's sitting down. He's meeting with Christopher Steele on July 30th. And then the next day, the FBI opens its Trump-Russia collusion investigation. That's July 31st, 2016. Now, the reason all of this is significant with respect to the dates, if you go back and look at Adam Schiff's memo, this is the one, I guess, that came out in response to the Nunes memo. Adam Schiff, the Democrat, he comes out and says, well, we didn't really, the FBI didn't know until weeks after the election that Hillary Clinton was behind the dossier. We didn't know. We just thought it was good evidence. Well, now we know that they did know. Now we know that Adam Schiff and others have been lying. Margot Cleveland, she works at The Federalist, I believe. She tweeted out this morning, Solomon's reporting, this might have been last night actually, she said, Solomon's reporting strongly supports an even more significant point. That dossier served as basis for opening Crossfire Hurricane and FISA applications, falsely stated it was open because of Papadopoulos. So they've been trying to cover their tracks, saying the dossier wasn't as significant as you're making it out to be. There was this shady character, Papadopoulos. That's the reason that we started this investigation. In fact, just like I said yesterday, or I guess this was 2 days ago, in fact, it's been the dossier from day one. You go to the very first line of the dossier, what it says, that Donald Trump is essentially a Russian agent, and that document, that propaganda, it's not only responsible for them getting those FISA warrants, it's also, like Cleveland tweeted out, it's also responsible for getting the investigation off and running. Papadopoulos didn't have anything to do with it. They tried to make that part of the story later on. But you see just how tangled they are in their web of lies. This article from John Solomon, listen to this quote. He says, Orr divulged his first contact with the FBI was on July 31st, 2016. So he talks with Christopher Steele, who had also talked to the FBI in July of 2016. He talks to Christopher Steele on July 30th. He makes his first contact with the FBI on July 31st, and that happens to be the same day that so-called counterintelligence investigation is opened up. But Solomon says here, when he reached out to then, listen to these names, he reached out to then Deputy Director Andrew McCabe and FBI attorney Lisa Page. He then was referred to the agents working Russia counterintelligence, including Peter Strzok, and the now fired agent, who played a central role in starting the Trump collusion probe. So these are all the people that hated Donald Trump. They still hate him. These are all the people who are trying to rig the election in favor of Hillary Clinton. He's telling them, look, you might want to verify this because this document's funded by Hillary Clinton. And they said, fine, thank you. And then they opened an investigation and they got FISA warrants and they deceived the judges in order to get them. It's incredible. This Solomon piece says that along the way, Bruce Orr also briefed Andrew Weissman, He was then the head of the DOJ's fraud section, and now he's Bob Mueller's top deputy. They were all in on it. He's Mueller's pit bull, as has been said. They were all in on it. A total abuse of the FISA system, a total abuse of power. You think about what President Trump has said. Well, my father's made this point before. But the president, remember when he said, if they can do this to me, what can they do? What can they do to someone that can't afford to pay a lawyer $500-$600 an hour? What can they do to your average, everyday, ordinary American? And so he's fighting back, the president is, the president and his team. He's fighting back, and as I covered the other day, he's considering it his crowning achievement, exposing this cabal, exposing this treason, exposing this coup. Look at what it says. Look at what it reveals about the United States of America. As the National Review asked this morning, when did it become the FBI's job to act as the check and balance to the president? Look at what we're finding out just this past week. And I think there's some pretty good indication to suggest that even the New York Times story that came out last Friday night, it was leaked out because the evidence was about to be made known. And so there's the left-wing media together with their leakers. They want to get out in front of the real bombshell revelations. And so they try to frame it in a way that makes their side look good. And it's becoming harder and harder to do. The corruption, the abuse of the FISA system. Remember what Greg Jarrett said in his book about how that 99% of all FISA applications are approved because it's judges that are just hearing from one side, from the government, and they're taking the government at its word. Here come these government attorneys or these government investigators saying, look, judge, we need this. We need this. We need to be able to spy here. This is really dangerous what's happening. And the judge always gives it to them. Jarrett said in his book, the FISA court operates in secret. It's not an adversarial venue. No opposing views are presented because no other side is present. The integrity of the process is entirely dependent on the government being truthful and forthright. It's entirely dependent on people telling the truth, which so many people are not doing. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll roll through a few more stories before we conclude today's show with lots and lots of emails. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Before we get to our emails, I thought I'd just follow up on a number of segments we've had in recent months where we've stressed the importance of reading and study. There's that verse in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 13 where Paul says to Timothy, "Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, and to doctrine." This was 2,000 years ago. And you think about all of the distractions that are out there today in our modern era, and the amount of time that we're spending in front of screens. There's this Study Finds survey that found that we're spending nearly half of our waking hours staring at a screen. I think it's something like 6 or 7 hours per day. It says here in this this study, for all the studies that tell us how important it is to limit screen time, does it sometimes feel that no matter where we are or what we do, there's a screen in front of us one way or another? Perhaps it's no surprise then that Americans spend nearly half their waking hours looking at screens, according to a survey of 2,000 adults. It says further on that the problem is only getting worse. So if you think about what Paul said to Timothy, that would apply to us all the more today. We really do need to give attendance to reading. There was this report from the Associated Press recently as well about how that U.S. classrooms, these are schoolrooms, school kids, the classrooms are turning into arcades, or they resemble arcades. It says, peek inside your average classroom these days, and you're likely to see teachers using apps, websites, and software that borrow elements from video games to connect with students living technology-infused lives. They have to use all of these bells and whistles just to try to keep their attention, just to try to connect with the students, the young people. It says, by all accounts, they're fun to use. The studies have found that some can be effective, but there's also skepticism about how often students who use them are better educated or just better entertained. So we have to entertain the students just to hold their attention. You see the direction that this is headed. And so, as I say, any way that you can, as an adult or for your children, to just get them away from the screen and into their books and into their studies. We've got a program on this station hosted by Dennis Leap, Just the Best Literature. We've talked about that before. And, of course, we've given quite a few recommendations ourselves here on this show to encourage you not only to read and to study the literature produced by this church, but even great works of history, if you can squeeze that in. There was a story the other day that Richard gave to me about the U.S. commanders that every American should study. The first one it gives is George Washington, and it points out how that he was self-educated. This article says Washington was a self-taught general who didn't have a professional military education system or 25-year career to prepare for his senior leadership role. It says prior to taking command of the Continental Army, Washington had only led 300 soldiers. However, what he lacked in experience, he made up for in self-study. Washington took his military education seriously, grasping every opportunity to increase his knowledge in the art of war. It says here, finally, he bought every military science and history book he could find, making notes in the margins and eventually producing orders from them. This commitment, it says, prepared him for the challenge he faced in the Revolutionary War. And so this article then gives some recommendations, some books about how that he was self-taught. And there's one, I think, in particular. It's not mentioned in this article, but we've actually got it on the list. We have a long-running list for our book club. But down the road, at some point, we'd like to read George Washington, The Indispensable Man by James Thomas Flexner. It's not a new one. I think it's a few decades old, this biography. And it's an abridged version, so it's not too terribly long. But there's plenty of them out there, I'm sure. This article I'm reading recommends A Powerful Mind, The Self-Education of George Washington. So I don't know much about that publication or that book, but there's many to choose from. And it brings to mind, this was something that someone sent in a few days ago. I think it was over the weekend. One of our listeners down in Australia that happened to see this short video with David McCullough. You're familiar with him. He's the one that wrote 1776 and also the John Adams biography that we referred to a few months ago. But he was on this video talking about the importance of Washington as America's first president, just how indispensable he was, and about some of his character traits, his courage, his convictions, as he says here in this first clip. This is a video that was put out, I think it's put out by the George Washington, or George Washington's Mount Vernon, but listen to clip one.
He wasn't an intellectual. He wasn't a great speaker or a brilliant writer. He wasn't, as a military leader, a brilliant tactician or a strategist. But he had the capacity to make people want to follow him. And if there was a more courageous human being who ever lived, I don't know who it was. And it was the courage of his convictions. And he would not quit. Every sign was, it was over, you've lost, give up, it's not worth it. But no, he wouldn't stop.
A self-taught man, and yet a man of principle, of conviction, and he wouldn't give up. Tremendous courage. These are individuals that employed quite a few of the laws of success. Even if they didn't know all of God's truth, a lot of them did study their Bibles, and they practiced those laws of success, and they led the United States, in his case, to victory. Here's a clip two.
I think maybe if there's a message in Washington's life, it's that willingness to serve and not just talk about what you're going to do, but to act. Takes both, and absolute selfless service to the country in, as they said, war and peace, for no pay, nothing in it for him. And then when he gets the ultimate power, as almost nobody could imagine, he gave it up, willingly, of his own choice. And this was after the war was over and he'd won. He was the conquering general. He was the hero. He could have been anything he wanted, czar, king, potentate, whatever. He could have made the presidency into a totally different kind of office. But he relinquished power. He said, no, I'm going back to Mount Vernon. And when George III heard that George Washington, might do that, he said, if he does that, he will be the greatest man in the world. And because nobody had done that before.
What a unique leader. Nobody had ever done that before. He had all of this power, all of this authority. He could have been whatever he wanted to be. And yet he relinquished power. He went back to Mount Vernon. A remarkable man. And you're listening to a remarkable historian as well. He's in his 80s, and there's one YouTube comment underneath the video that said that his eyes, David McCullough's eyes, sparkle when he speaks of George Washington. It says his love for American history is so wonderful and inspiring. That's what our children need to see. They need to see our eyes sparkling when we talk about these towering figures of history, when we teach them lessons from their lives. Do our eyes sparkle? You really do see it. We're going to miss this historian when he's gone. He's not going to be around for much longer himself. But there he is telling us that we really should appreciate these founding fathers. Here's another clip from that same video, clip three.
Washington was our greatest president. He was the one at the start. He held it together and he set the example. He was the defining model of what the president should be and do. We could not have been more fortunate.
Of course, there's more than fortune to this story, divine providence. We know the truth about the United States and Britain and all of these blessings that God poured down upon our nations there toward the end of the 1700s and especially the beginning of the 1800s, and all of the people, the individuals that God positioned for this history, for this prophecy to be fulfilled. We could not have been more fortunate, McCullough says. one final clip from that video, clip four.
He held the country together, held the cause together, and did so in a way that sets an example for behavior as a citizen that we can all learn from, and that his picture really should be, along with Abraham Lincoln, back in every schoolroom, as it used to be. And this isn't ancestor worship, or this isn't old-fashioned history. This is reality. This is the truth. And to be indifferent to people like Washington, to be uninterested in people like Washington, is really a form, in part, of ingratitude. We ought to be down on our knees every day thanking God that we are part of this country.
Imagine if you brought that spirit into classrooms all across the United States. You put the picture of Washington and Lincoln in the back of the classroom, and then the teachers leading the children to get down on their knees and to thank God that they're part of this country. That's quite a different scene from what you see in the modern classroom, which is more and more resembling an arcade. We should be on our knees thanking God. Mr. Armstrong, remember how often he talked about the sin of ingratitude and how unthankful and ungrateful we are. It's time for all of us to realize how blessed we are, Mr. Armstrong once wrote, and give God thanks. It will, if you dig into your history, particularly if it's the United States and Britain, it will make you appreciate what God has given to our people, to our nations. It's a good little article. I forget where it came from, but an encouragement to study into the lives of great U.S. military commanders. I'll just mention one other example since we've talked about him recently as well. It recommends studying the life of General U.S. Grant. It says here, Grant began his career as only an average officer, graduating 21st in a class of 39 from the United States Military Academy. He didn't give off the appearance of being a military leader or a winner. He wasn't polished. He had a drinking problem. He wasn't successful in business and was a good deal shorter than Lincoln, Lee, and Sherman. He was just 5'8". But when the U.S. Civil War broke out, Grant made his mark. He led the Union Army to victories at the Battle of Shiloh and the Vicksburg Campaign, and eventually defeated Robert E. Lee. He became Lincoln's most trusted military advisor, following a series of failed commanders. It says, through his memoirs, readers are transported into the mind of U.S. Grant as he tackled complicated problems, dealt with a myriad of personalities in his subordinate commanders, and came to terms with wartime decisions. A remarkable life, a remarkable study. It recommends the personal memoirs of U.S. Grant, which is considered a classic work. I haven't read that yet myself. It also notes the Ron Chernow book, which I've mentioned a few times, the 2017 biography about Grant. Some excellent admonition there in just one article. This is what we should be getting across to our young people in classrooms today. Well, we have to keep the prod on ourselves to give attendance to reading in this age of so much noise and distraction. We've had quite a few emails that have come in recent weeks. Most of these, I think, are from the last couple weeks or so. But this first one here, it comes from California. It says, in reference to the presidential coup from within, up until 6 months ago, I became annoyed and frustrated because I couldn't believe what was actually happening. Every time the subject of your radio show was about this attack on the president. I prayed and prayed to God for understanding. Why was I becoming upset when you and the trumpet have taught me that this is all God's plan and that the president being the end-time Jeroboam, saving Israel temporarily, now, this is in reference to the show the other day, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, says, now when you discuss this subject as you did today with this recap of the last 2.5 years, I can truly say that I no longer become annoyed and frustrated, but relieved and satisfied that I have complete understanding of what is happening in and to the United States. I thank you greatly for all that you do. Well, it is something that we have gotten into a lot, but you can't help but to keep going back to those articles by my father, who is the modern-day Jeroboam and then saving America temporarily. And it is an ongoing story, and more details continue to be revealed. So we'll certainly try every once in a while. I think what he appreciated was just sort of getting the whole picture of the past 2.5 years rather than, I suppose, the bit-by-bit strategy or tack that we take from time to time. He says, by the way, P.S., I'm beginning part 3 of the John Adams biography by David McCullough. So that's awesome to see some of our listeners really pursuing after their reading, giving attendance to their reading. As I've mentioned recently, we're now starting into Napoleon the Great by Andrew Roberts. We have our first book club this evening on that book, so you'll probably be hearing a little bit about that in the weeks ahead. This second email comes from Barbados. It says, I write to you from the Caribbean island of Barbados after hearing your most recent program, watched, read, and followed by millions. That was, of course, yesterday's show. You can listen to all of these programs at our website, thetrumpet.com. We post them as podcasts 3-4 hours after the live show each day. But it says here, I've been associated with God's work for approximately 37 years, beginning in 1982, on up to the present time. I was baptized in March of 1985, and I do recall the sadness of Mr. Armstrong's death, but also the joy that came from hearing the speeches of support, of honor, of respect by Mr. DeKotch and others for the late Herbert W. Armstrong. As we know now, this was later revealed as nothing but lies. Yesterday, it was particularly touching the way you weave together the very small beginnings of God's work that began back in 1934. And this brought home to me how so much it mirrors the present era of small beginnings. God is truly the same yesterday, today, and always. I'm truly honored to be part of this marvelous work and happy to be able to identify with that history you so truthfully and honestly portrayed regarding the late Herbert W. Armstrong. I can still hear his voice saying, pleading, begging listeners, blow the dust off your Bibles, or don't believe me, believe your Bible. To me, that was his cry of, Lord, give me one more. That comes from Barbados. This one here from Illinois, it says, the radio show continues to be my favorite part of the Trumpet organization. I do, however, read most articles and several books. I've been on board for 15 years now, so an avid listener and also a Trumpet reader 15 years on. This one here was in response to the state of California's attack on the church back in 1979. We had two programs on that in the early part of this month. And then I wrote up the Trumpet brief on the same subject from Monday. And so this listener writes, I just read your Trumpet brief about the state of California's attack on God's church. It brought back so many memories. And I want to tell you about something that happened to my husband and me at that time. It says, we lived in the Chicago area, but moved to Ohio 3 weeks before the attack on God's church. Chicago real estate was much more expensive than Ohio, so we made a nice profit when we sold our house. there and bought a new one in Ohio. We decided that we should share some of that profit with God's church. This is all happening in 1978, 1979. It says, we sent the check to Pasadena. Then on the following Sabbath, they announced that we should send all the checks to Tucson. We were very upset. Our first thought was, had we given all that money to the state of California? We were new in the church and really didn't know what to do about it. It says, a few weeks later, then we got the mail, and there was our unopened letter in the mailbox. We had no idea why it came back, but we always believed that it was a miracle from God. Here they arranged to make this big offering to the church. Right at the time, the receiver tried to take over the Worldwide Church of God, and then the check comes back a couple weeks later. That is a miracle. Pretty amazing. This one here comes from New York. It says, back in the late 1980s, I enrolled in the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence course. I only got about halfway through before I set it aside, never to complete it. Life took over, and it wasn't until after the court case where the PCG won the rights to the course that I eventually re-enrolled and recently completed it. It says here, looking back at it, I wonder if the church is falling away didn't have something to do with my shelving the course back then. The period between The World Tomorrow and The Key of David was a busy time for me, but relatively spiritually inactive. Well, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. When you look at it across the board, so many people back in the late 80s, early 90s that were setting aside God's truth and not studying. And it's amazing when you get back into it, when you give attendance to reading, when you give attendance to it, a lot of good things happen. He's back on track now. That's encouraging to see. This one here comes from Ontario, Canada. It says, I wanted to share something that you might find interesting about Canadians. We, too, seem to be obsessed with Donald Trump. I had noticed a contentious spirit erupts at work when his name is mentioned, and he's often the brunt of jokes and rude put-downs. But when I saw this, it solidified my theory. And she refers to the local newspaper that talks about the top five most borrowed books from coming from the public library. And the first one is Fear, Trump in the White House by Bob Woodward. And then the second one is Becoming Michelle Obama. The third most requested book at that local library, this is a small Canadian town, Fire and Fury, Inside the Trump White House by Michael Wolff. That's the fiction, remember. And then there's 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. So there's one exception, I guess. And then the fifth one is Trumpocracy, The Corruption of the American Republic. So all of these, four of the five books trashing the President of the United States. And that's up in a little town in Canada. And she says, have a great week, enjoying the Trumpet Daily every day when I get home from work. Another one here says, great program on of our glorious history in the Sixth Era. Thank you for explaining it in great depth and detail. Outstanding. We cannot forget our wonderful history. Another email says, always listen to your program. I like all of them. The last two programs have been outstanding. A tremendous thank you for your inspired work. If I miss the live broadcast, I listen to the podcast on Overcast. I'm not familiar with that one, but there's lots of different ways to listen in this day and age. Verse 9. Email number 9 I have here. Thanks for soldiering on, it says. Here's to your continuing on toward the crown. Please keep delivering. We need it out here. Another email here says, thank you for your show concerning organized reading and studying. As I listened to your admonition, I was reminded of a sermon Mr. Armstrong gave where he emphasized that we should be praying and studying more diligently. This is a great opportunity that we all have as the first fruits of God's master plan, and we should be taking full advantage of the time we have in this last hour. God bless his church, and God bless his work. Another one here says, I just finished listening to the show and want to say that I'm inspired to set goals for this year. I must admit that I have never been organized in my studies. I'm a serious reader of good books, but it has always been unorganized. I want to follow through on the inspiration by beginning at the Napoleon the Great book. Thanks to you all. So there's another one that's joining us for our book club. We, by the way, we are redesigning a few of the pages at thetrumpet.com, and the hope is that we can make more of that content that that we actually have at the book club itself, to make that available to the Trumpet audience as well. So we'll keep you posted on those developments. Another one here comes in from the Philippines. It says, as always, I eagerly wait for your Trumpet Daily every night at 9 p.m. here in the Philippines. The episodes this week, so this must be one who listens live over in the Philippines. That's 9 at night. Here, it's 1 in the afternoon here in the UK, and back in Oklahoma, it's 7 in the morning. People listening at all times of the day. It says the episodes this week, from Back to the Beginning last Monday and about the populist movement in Europe last Wednesday, especially last night about the German-Franco axis, show and prove the power and existence of God Almighty. Another one here says, fabulous broadcasting. I can't imagine life without the Trumpet Daily Illumination. When the live broadcast failed this morning, this is from a week or two ago, I think, I was deeply curious what the live audience would miss. A terrifying look at the juggernaut, it says. I remember in my childhood watching Spider-Man fight this powerful juggernaut, and it was really impressed on my mind how indestructible and unstoppable that juggernaut was and how completely helpless Spider-Man was. Well, I'm not familiar with this battle, but it says here, the juggernaut is here. Israel is a wounded soldier awaiting the sharp bayonet. I pray we rend our hearts and rend our hearts and our hearts, it says over and again. Another email comes from Texas. It says, how are we able to understand the sagacious scholars of the past without knowledgeable educational guidance and practical discipline today? This is also in response to just adding structure and order to your study. It says, we individually may not be ruling a nation, but we do need the means to learn and rule ourselves. How will we build faith without true biblical education? We need only the best, and we need to stand on the shoulders of experts who have followed this formula and mastered their craft. Surely God has blessed his work. Let us surge forward with an inspired kinetic direction. A few more here. This one comes from Colombia. It says, greetings, I live in Medellin, Colombia. I love your radio program. I wish we had a trumpet radio, not only in Medellin, but in all of Colombia. Thank you for God's work. Another one here from the UK. It says, radio requires a special voice to entice the listener's ear. It is important to the message brought to us from Christ to the world via thetrumpet.com. Sam Livingston's voice improves with each broadcast. This is from the UK, so this comes from your wife, I bet. Fine-tuning his work greatly. Great professionalism. It is greatly appreciated. Sam stepped in while I was in Oklahoma, so this is from a couple of weeks ago. But another one here says, excellent job, Sam. Well-researched history, presented clearly, concisely, directly, and to the point. That also is from the UK. This is very, very suspicious. Another one here from Massachusetts this time. It says, thank you so much for going through all of this. I'm embarrassed at how little I know about certain aspects of our history and government function. Add to this the fact that I don't follow the mainstream news outlets on a regular basis. It says, as a result, it is even harder to follow our current convoluted government issues. I've been praying about this as I listen to program after program on TDRS with a clear belief that all these things are very wrong, but without a full understanding of exactly what has unfolded. It says, this kind of foundational explanation was really well done and exceedingly helpful to me. I appreciate everyone's efforts. So that, too, in response to Mr. Livingston's program from a couple weeks ago. What was the title of that one? He doesn't know. It's too far in the past. One final email, and this comes from a precious little gal from Kansas City who makes it a point to say hi to me every time I cross her path. It says, "Hello, Mr. Flurry. Did you enjoy the ministerial conference? I did. It was wonderful to talk to you there. You did a good job on your sermon. P.S. It is such a blessing to type this to you." So wonderful, wonderful response to conclude today's show with. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program and possibly have your email read live over the air, send it to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.